The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Bolton Stoke in Trotter Potter shocker. What was behind this Pulis brutality? The Pod asks as part of a special caring look at the burgeoning battle at the bottom with Wolves, Wigan and Fulham too after their clash with Spurs. There's the rest of our Premier League news and the latest from our foreign football department, Sid, that Bilbao Barca business, and Real Madrid wearing special jerseys for Antonio Cassano after he had a stroke. I never did anything for Ashley Young. The Serie A Championship post, tweets and more in today's Football Weekly. Hi, everybody, and welcome on board today. Barney Rone.
Hi.
Hi, Greg Ruffley.
Hi, James.
And Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Hi, Jacob. You watched 12 hours of football on Sunday.
Yeah.
All right.
Bits.
What stood out for you?
Probably Cristiano Ronaldo, but you probably want to talk to Sid about that.
No, I'm happy to hear from you about it as well. That's quite a marathon. Was it just all in one go or what?
Started at 11, Real Madrid, doing a minute by minute on that. And then had some lunch and then watched Wolves with Wigan, which was
right.
Not as good as Real Madrid.
Okay.
And then
you said you watched 12 hours of football.
Yeah. All right, with you're a making bit, a bit of satire about Wolves.
Yeah.
Right, funny. And what did you follow Wolves Wigan up with?
Fulham Spurs minute by minute.
Hey, that was a cracker, yeah. Wasn't it?
And then I went home and watched Barcelona, and then I watched Match of the Day.
Wow. Yeah. All right, can anyone beat that, 12 hours of football?
No.
No? No. All right, yeah. Then. Well,
you need to get a life.
Yeah, but you're
a little bit now, haven't you?
Should be doing. You've got a life called football.
Yeah.
What did you do on Saturday?
I was in here watching football.
Well, what did you see on Saturday then, Jacob?
Newcastle.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. All right then. You didn't see Bolton Stoke, which is a shame, because that's very much item one today, he said, looking around.
A little bit of that.
Yeah, all right, Greg. Yeah. How about this 5-0? What fearful symmetry there is there, then, eh?
Well, yeah, and Bolton really needed the win as well. I mean, they've not won at home all season under Owen Coyle. And it all started with that 5-0 defeat to Stoke at Wembley, their downward spiral. And it looks like they've kind of used Stoke to climb back up again.
Or have they? Because, of course, they started off the season with a big 4-0 win away at QPR. And we thought, oh, this is going to be good from Bolton. And it was just it was a little island in the midst of a very barren sea.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that the main point that they did well at the beginning of that game was Begovic in Stoke's goal just made it. It's kind of just a really poor decision that you wouldn't make at Sunday level. You know, there's a free kick and he, I don't know if any of the listeners will have seen it, he picked the ball up and kind of had hold of it and Klasnic went over to grab the ball off him. And instead of just holding on to the ball and letting his defenders get back in position, he just kind of let him have the ball and Klasnic put it on the floor and passed it sideways to Davis, and Davis just slotted it home. So it was 1-0 after 2 minutes.
Mm.
And then Bolton, I mean, on a high then, Stoke, there was another mistake shortly afterwards where Begovic his clearance was terrible. Played it out to the, you know, kind of didn't miss-kick the ball. Eagles picked it up and it was a fantastic finish from like 35 yards. He hit it into the only place he could in the net where he'd score, but it was just poor goalkeeping from Stoke.
It was both really good. I mean, it was a really good play from Bolton on both occasions, I thought. I mean, you always get really annoyed when people hang on to the ball and don't give it to the other team, but that's... Yeah. It was quite funny. I mean, he was arguing with the referee while the ball was being squared.
He should have just kept hold of it, though. I mean, he had hold of the ball.
Oh, yeah, he should have done,
yeah. Just turn around and walk back towards your goal and don't let anybody have it.
Was it just one of those games, then, rather than heralding the new dawn of
No,
of
I
Bolton?
Think Bolton will be fine. I mean, they've had a bad spell, but I think part of that was to do with Cahill and Davis weren't playing very well. And I mean, I got quite lyrical about them last season because I saw them play really well on a couple of occasions. I think they're really a decent team, and I think they'll be fine. I think there's enough. I like the way they try and play football. I mean, there's something about Owen Coyle. He does slightly sort of massage the way things are. He's very good at presenting things, and he presents himself as a kind of Glaswegian Arsene Wenger.
It's been hard to assess Bolton because they've lost most of the team that made them successful last year, with Holden injured and Lee's
Almander,
out.
I think they've really missed
Almander's out, and Sturridge scored all their goals in the second half of the season. He went back on loan. They didn't buy very well in the summer. They bought Ngog, who's... He's not going to get the goals at Sturridge will. It's also a good time to play Stoke, because after the Europa League games, they've only won one in six, and they've been thrashed by Bolton and Sunderland, who both needed a...
It's a bit of a problem for Stoke, isn't it? Because normally when teams are suffering a bit like that, they think, right, we'll go back to basics. We're going to fight for everything. We're going to just do the... Where's the basics? Can they go? But
well, they got the formation wrong. I think they played 5-3-2 away at, when they went to Israel in the Europa League, and they had the players to play that formation. I think against Bolton, they played three centre backs in a 4-4-2 formation. Woodgate,
they do that quite often though.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't work for them because the distribution, you know, it's going to affect the distribution.
I think they played 4-4-2 against at the weekend, didn't they?
No, they did at the weekend, I'm saying, in midweek. They made nine changes from one game to the next. And it's, you know, obviously to try and avoid a European hangover. Yeah. And they
it's interesting. They've got quite a big squad, but each time it hasn't seemed to pay off for them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just the Europa thing. As you say, just one win in six now.
No, so I mean, sorry, that's one win in six after playing Europa League. But they also lost to Newcastle last week, and they were really poor in that game.
Mwamba was back for Bolton as well, and he did very well in midfield. So, I mean, they've missed him.
Mm.
He was very good last season.
Excellent. All right. Also... down at the sharp end of things, at the wrong end of the table, Wolves Wigan facing each other, and you saw this in all its glory, Jacob.
Not all its glory.
All right, were they still booing at Molyneux? That's my first question.
I was watching it with the sound off, so I don't
know.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. But they were pretty poor for about half an hour, and there was a real pivotal moment where Rodiega had missed an open goal. They went straight up the other end, Wolves, and scored. Martinez was saying that his team couldn't react to going behind, even though they did react to going behind by equalising. And then, even despite Al Habsi's heroics, you know, that amazing double set or triple save, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah. He clawed it back just on the line.
Yeah, and then... But I think Wolves will probably be okay. Yeah, at home they seem to be able to pound away at teams despite not being very good.
That's a Premier League record 8 defeats in a row. Short of bringing in Avram Grant, it's hard to see how they could be more doomed.
Yeah, they're also, I noticed that Martinez, he did mention that Rodiega one-on-one.
Yeah.
And he's singling out his players. And when managers start doing that, you kind of think, oh dear, there's not a lot of way back. I mean, if anyone's going to get him out of it, it's probably Rodiega. You don't want to be...
He's not scored all season as well. I mean, like, he was the man who saved them last season. He's not managed to score.
The other one's DeSanto.
he scored three goals and that's it. So I think they scored 7 goals all season, Wigan. And that's the major reason they're doing badly, because they're not very good defensively. So they've got to put the chances away when they get them, and they haven't this season.
All right.
It's a shame about Martinez. I mean, he had a really good plan. I remember him explaining his plan. They were going to buy talent in and polish it and sell it on and become this kind of...
Well, that's the plan that Jewel and Bruce kind of used as well. And they've managed to do it, whereas he's not managed to do it, has he, since he's...
Well, he's managed to sell players on,
yeah.
But they've only got 5 points.
All right. Meanwhile, at Ewood Park... all sorts of extraordinary events. Chelsea were in town. Wasn't much between these two teams. Blackburn, was this one of the games you saw, Jacob?
On Match of the Day.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But it was actually a very decent performance by Rovers.
I was at the Norwich game last week, and I thought there's real sort of signs. They've got a really, really decent midfield.
Yeah.
They need a kind of bit more of a destroyer in there. That's what the fans would say. But no, I think Blackburn will also be fine. Like Bolton, I think. Steve Keen in. I mean, I think at least he's trying to... I mean, they got quite a long ball a bit earlier in the season. There's only a few away games, but he seems to be playing some quite nice football. And, you know, Junior Hoylett is a fantastic player.
Sadly, Christoph Samba is no longer of the... or at least for the next 5 weeks, won't be available for selection following that injury. But, it is surprising how the fans remain steadfast in their... You know, even employing a low-flying aircraft to broadcast the Steve Keen out message.
The interesting thing about Steve Keen is before he became Blackburn manager, he was really, really highly rated as a coach. He was seen as the sort of coming man on all those courses and things they do. He was the man who everybody really rated, and the idea of getting him into your club was a really... You know, that was Steve Keen. He's the man to watch. And for some reason, you know, he's been given a chance, which is obviously a good thing.
Hmm.
People just really dislike him.
It's indicative of society, though, that people want a name, don't they, or like something, a celebrity or something, you know, to kind of sell the brand of the club. And you know, it's not the kind of, they don't do it in football now where they bring a coach through and they kind of stay with them and give them the support. I mean, they might be like the club's giving him more support, but I mean, the fans have.
There's no doubt he made a few mistakes. He did make some mistakes, and you know, sort of learning process and all that. But
it's also the way he came in, I think, that cast a slight shadow.
But he's not just some patsy. Like, he is actually really highly rated as a coach, and if you give him a chance, who knows? I mean, and they're playing nice football, so maybe he can turn it round.
Hey, what about Villa's burst? Hey, has the bubble burst? Has it?
They just won.
Yeah, I know. All right then. Bubble's still intact for Villa's burst.
Well, there's a really, really good miss by Torres at the end.
Yes.
That was fantastic.
Actually, Torres, that's an interesting point. Torres, who was on the bench for this game.
He was.
And then
Sturridge
came on.
Up front.
Yeah. And he hardly looked filled with the desire to prove his manager wrong. There was one point where he had a... It was 2-1, I think.
That was the bit that led up to his miss. And he kind of... I can't remember who it was.
He looked like the last thing in the world he wanted to do was be near a goal with a ball at his feet.
Yeah, it was the same with the penalty last week where he didn't take it. And I think all the guys on Sky, Graham Souness, was saying that... you know, as a striker, you should always want to take a penalty, and in the end, it went to David Luiz.
Right.
I don't know.
He's got an incredibly big, like, ego, I think, Torres, and he doesn't seem to... I mean, you'd think he would be busting a gut at this moment in time after everything he's gone through, but he does seem to, now and again, he'll just sulk and won't really care what anybody thinks.
It was at Liverpool, wasn't it, at the end?
Yeah, towards the end, he didn't really care what anybody thought about him.
So you think it's overconfidence almost rather than a lack of confidence?
No, I think it's overconfidence. Right. Yeah, I don't think he's the kind of player who's affected. If he thinks he's good enough, even if he's not proven it, I think he really does believe it.
I've got a lack of belief.
Overconfidence. He's got too much belief.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the exact opposite, isn't it? I mean, it's very hard to interpret people's body language and all that kind of thing, but I think he looks like a lost little child.
Yeah, that was the body language I was reading as well.
Yeah. I think it's the overconfidence is coming through as...
It's the playground swagger, is it?
Yeah, right. Showing through as a lack of confidence.
All right. Well, there you go. Listeners, I don't know where you stand on the whole Fernando Torres body language issue. Meantime, producer Ben, who's back, everybody, insists that that's not quite enough for part one. So, let me mention that... Spurs are now level with Chelsea with a game in hand, that game being the early fixture they had at home to Everton. When are they going to play that game? Goodness sake, it's been months now. Anyway, there they are with a game in hand, and that was quite an exciting game. You did see this, didn't you? Who else saw this? Terrific game.
It was great, wasn't it? I find myself that I love watching Spurs now. I mean, they're such an exciting team to watch. They've got so much speed. We were talking about this before. This is
Kyle
weird
Walker.
New interpretation of how to play football involved around just sprinting like a 100-metre. It's incredible. Yeah, Kyle Walker is unbelievable.
He's even faster than Aaron Lennon.
Yeah.
They must be the fastest team on the counter-attack in the Premier League. Asu Okotu, Kyle Walker, Lennon and Bale.
Yeah, Bale as well, yeah.
Afterburners on them.
And Van der Vaart is always just a joy to watch. I mean, they are a wonderful team to watch at the moment, and they're in incredible form, aren't they?
Yeah, and 24 shots Fulham had. Spurs had just 4 and scored 3. It's amazing, isn't it?
Mm.
And we have to mention Brad Friedel at this point, because it was a siege at the end of the Spurs goal.
Yeah, I've got a little man crush on Brad Friedel, I think. I just think he's been fantastic over so many years in the Premier League. I remember watching him at Liverpool many years ago, and he was playing behind a really shoddy defence at the time towards the end of I think it was 97. Yeah, and he didn't look the same goalkeeper. He went to Blackburn, and so many games he's brilliant in these goal-mouth scrambles, like the one against Fulham, where he just claws the ball out and manages to...
Claws is the word. I think he's got claws.
He has got claws, I think, yeah.
By the way, I've just gone on about Spurs. I have to mention that it would have been 2-2 if they had spotted the obvious handball. Fulham fans will be feeling a little bit hard done by there. I mean,
which was in amongst that goal-mouth scramble, I think.
Yeah, he clawed the ball back as well. I mean, obviously, it should have been a penalty, and then it's 3-1 at the other end, but, you know.
But still, they're great to watch, Spurs.
Yeah, they are.
Their form since losing to City has been incredible. Some 22 points from 24. I'm quite glad that they've... gone on like this, because for a lot of teams, if you don't qualify for the Champions League, that would be disastrous. You know, if Arsenal don't get it this season, then you'd expect Van Persie to go. But they managed to keep Modric and Bale, even though everyone was, you know, there was a link, Bale was linked with Inter and Madrid, and Modric was linked with Chelsea throughout the summer. And then they actually managed to strengthen the team and bring in Parker and Friedel and Adebayor. And they're actually a much better side than they were than the one that's qualified for the Champions
Bringing
League
in
2 years ago.
It was a really good move, because that's where they looked weak, definitely, in attack, because there wasn't no guarantee that Van der Vaart was going to last, you know, in every match, because he generally gets an injury.
What about the pain that Steve Sibbald laid on poor old Scott Parker, eh?
Well, it's probably the worst thing he could have done, because it just wound up Parker so much that he had another great game. He was blocking everything.
Mm.
Bit of spirit towards the end as well, Spurs. I mean, they have been attacking this season, but in the second half they were under a lot of pressure, and there's games in the past where they wouldn't have maybe hung on in the way they did, and maybe that is down to Brad, who I never kind of got to finish my little...
Oh yeah, sorry, right.
Just bit about just the fact that he's 40 years old now, and people probably when he left Blackburn and went to Villa probably thought, well, another season at Villa and then he'll retire, but he's
still playing, don't you?
He
was declared bankrupt in America.
Was he?
His football schools went under. I think he was badly advised, and he lost a huge amount of money, which probably helps.
Well, I'd like to think he's still playing because he's a good goalkeeper as
well. Yeah, he is a good goalkeeper.
Yeah. At least he went bankrupt for trying to do good, rather than make a bad movie involving Guy Ritchie or something.
Yeah, nothing like that.
Why? Who did that happen to?
Well, no, it's not happened. I think Ferdinand made that movie. I'm not saying he went bankrupt because of it.
Right. Was that a Guy Ritchie one? Gangster 51 or whatever?
Well, maybe a Guy Ritchie.
That had 50 Cent in it, didn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it did have 50 Cent.
I don't think Guy Ritchie was involved.
Wasn't he?
Have you seen
it? I bet he wanted to be involved.
He might have.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it. But perhaps listeners, if they've seen it, can post in with their reaction. But Ben, is that enough for part one? Certainly is. There you go, listeners. A short musical interlude, then we're back with a special celebration of Sir Alex's 25 years at Old Trafford. Man United. Exciting 1-0 win over Sunderland, etc. and so on.
Hey,
what was nice was Sir Alex Ferguson getting the stand named after him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
And he gets to look at it every other Saturday. Yeah,
well, I thought it was quite nice. They're going to make a statue as well,
yeah,
a la Al Fayed.
Busby doesn't have a stand, does he?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, we've just had two or three days of everyone explaining to us why Sir Alex is the greatest, but Barney Rone, in typical iconoclastic fashion, you're just going to get out of there and kick over the statue before they even put it up.
No, I mean, he's obviously an amazing manager, and he's won more, you know, his trophies are incredible. But
Busby is greater. Why, yeah, Barney, why?
Well, because he got there first. People say that Ferguson literally built the club with his own hands and stuff, but obviously he didn't.
Do people say that literally?
Well, it's interesting because, on another club, Bob Paisley literally did build parts of Anfield. He built the bench that they sat on. He built the bench that he sat on as the manager because he was a bricklayer when he joined the club. He'd been a bricklayer by trade, and he actually built the bench which he later sat on. But anyway, When Busby became manager, there was no Old Trafford. It had been bombed by the Luftwaffe. You know, the club was very close to just not existing. And what he did was amazing. And he kind of invented the role of the manager in many ways. And it was that sort of brand that they established that the Martin Edwards era at United with Ferguson were able to sort of cash in on. I mean, I think if you're talking about a real keystone in the whole thing, Busby's just completely unsurpassable.
You say he got there first, but he's older than Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
So he couldn't... So you can't compare them in that way.
Yeah, but the world has changed. It's just in terms of being great, in terms of building a club.
It's a nice platform for Ferguson to begin on.
Well, yeah, but they hadn't won anything for years.
No, but this is, I mean, I know what Barney's saying in terms of the ad. They were still a very well-supported club, but because of what Busby had done in the past.
They hadn't won a trophy for a while.
Sir Alex Ferguson couldn't do that. It would be impossible for him to do that.
Yes.
So he couldn't do it.
He hasn't had the opportunity, but what Busby did.
What he did was great, yeah. But to say that he's better because of that.
I'm not saying he's better, but when you talk about somebody building a club, you can no longer build a club. These clubs are already established. But Matt Busby was there at a time when that was still possible, and he actually did it in the same way that Shankly did at Liverpool.
But then there's no comparison between the two.
No, there is no comparison.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about great deeds and building a club and being absolutely inseparable from the history of that institution, you know, I mean, Busby was the man.
Hmm. And why doesn't he have a stand named after him?
I don't know. Because he wasn't around in the Premier League when everything's super and hyper. And
right. If you enjoyed that conversation, you'll be delighted to know you can read more such tales in Barney, your book about managers, which is called...
It's called The Manager.
Exactly. All right. Lots of pictures in it too. Woof. All right. All good bookshops?
And some rubbish ones as well.
All right. Excellent. Broad range. Good. There you go. Well, he's been there so long that some of his former players have had time to have entire careers as managers. Steve Bruce surely is going to be the first man who's going to finish his management career before his old mentor actually...
Never having beaten him as well.
Never having beaten him. Anyway.
Do you think that Ferguson does get an advantage out of that? Whenever I see Steve Bruce taking a team to Old Trafford, you do kind of feel that he's a bit... I mean, the way Mourinho came in and just didn't care and was so disrespectful at the start, and they obviously got on pretty well after that, but he really didn't care about upsetting Ferguson at the beginning. And you see, I mean, Ferguson knows everybody. He's such a godfather. It must give him a slight shading in some of these games.
Possibly. I mean, the fact that Sunderland aren't doing very well as well and haven't got as good players as Man United might have a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, although there was, the fact that Wes Brown scored the goal as well, which...
The midfield Rooney issue, can we address that briefly? Just because Nathan B. Brown, posting in on this very topic, saying, frequency with which Wayne Rooney is placed in the midfield, not a coincidence, particularly this season. He reckons it's all down to that hiding they got off Barcelona in the Champions League final last summer. And he reckons that the Rooney midfield move is actually Sir Alex's stratagem to actually be in a position to defeat Barcelona were they to meet them in the Champions League?
I'd suggest there's absolutely no chance of... Man United could put together any combination they want and they won't beat Barcelona in the Champions League.
Do you think that's influenced his thinking, though? He's seen the kind of
probably
creative
the fact
talent.
That he's got no midfielders, really.
Yeah, exactly. Right. What's influenced his thinking?
In the summer,
they didn't
really
buy a midfielder.
Didn't he try?
I would have thought he'd have gone all out for Modric more than he did.
Or
I mean,
Snyder as well.
Yeah, they gave up quite easily on those players, and that's what they would need if they were going to even challenge Barcelona, which I don't think they can.
Is that going to come back and haunt them this season, do you think, Greg?
Possibly.
Yeah.
It did against City.
It did, didn't it? Yeah. Right. Okay. Newcastle went second briefly on Saturday. Everton now have 6 defeats in 7. My word. I was quite surprised to see David Moyes' comments after that, where he says, well, we came here not expecting to get anything, and we didn't. Doesn't sound like David Moyes.
No, he's normally a bit more kind of...
Yeah, certainly Royston Drenthe had a bit more of the battle fever on him. We are going to Newcastle to win because we are boys with big balls, said Royston Drenthe. And Chant says, can we keep him, Davey, please? He's a big addition to the Toffee squad, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good player, isn't he?
Yeah. All right. Anyway, Newcastle, they went second and then dropped back again to third, but still amazing and still unbeaten.
Well, their next 3 games are Man United, Man City and Chelsea.
The two Manchester teams away and then Chelsea at home.
Yes. But I don't think there's a bit of an overreaction because Newcastle aren't going to win the league. They never thought they were going to win the league. I think they'll be happy if they finish 6th or 7th. So, you know, they might well lose these next 3 games and people will say, oh, they're rubbish, won't they?
I think Newcastle can get something.
They can, quite possibly. And they could. Yeah. I think they could easily beat Chelsea at St James's Park as well. But if they lose the 3, then people shouldn't start writing them off. Because they weren't, you know, not. It wouldn't be like if Man United lost 3 games in a row.
That's true. Arsenal, they're not losing games anymore. Big 3-0 win over West Brom. There you go. Terrific. Villa beat Norwich.
They're not even drawing games. They've lost that one game against Spurs, haven't they? I think it's otherwise they've won, was it 9 out of 10?
It's crazy, isn't it?
Aaron
Ramsey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aaron Ramsey indeed.
Yeah, there you go. Now, before we leave the Premier League for now, Villa beat Norwich, I did say that, didn't I? Yep, there you go. I just want to make sure that I mention all these teams, because otherwise they'll be hell to pay. Greg, Liverpool.
Yeah, against Swansea, eh?
Yeah, do these chickens have heads on or not? Your view.
They do have heads on. I mean, it's more... The issue against Swansea was Liverpool went out with a 4-4-2 formation against Swansea, were playing 4-5-1.
Right. Am I going to get a headache again?
No, you're not going to get a headache, okay. No. And they didn't... They're very rigid when Carroll's in the team. If you've got two strikers and you immediately see that you're playing against a Swansea side who've got very good midfielders who can pass the ball around, they're not a team who came to defend at Anfield, then you maybe need to make a switch in the tactics quite early on in the game. But if you've got Carroll up front, he's not able to come back and help out in midfield the way other players might be able to who could play up front or play just behind the striker. And last season, some of the best games Liverpool played when Dalglish was in charge was the likes of Maxi Rodriguez was in there, Kout, Raul Morellas, who were very versatile players. You could drift between attack and midfield. Against Swansea, they could have done with that. And I mean, they started off and Carroll had a chance after 6 minutes and blasted it against the bar. And then thereafter, his confidence was kind of ruined and Liverpool didn't kind of, there was no cohesion in the play. And until the last 10 minutes, they were kind of, it was a very even game. I mean, the cop applauded Swansea off at the end because
they boo Liverpool as well?
There were some boos there, yeah. There were some boos. But I mean, I think there was more kind of appreciation for what Swansea had done because they've been very poor away from home this season, but the midfield was really, really good. There's, I think it's Dyer, Britton, Allen and Gower and Wayne Routledge played as well. And they really did pass the ball around in little triangles and had Liverpool running around all over the place. Lucas and Adam were kind of getting caught, you know, and having to make up ground. And then when Liverpool did get the ball, they were getting kind of hounded and they were quite tired.
You tweeted the fact that Charlie Adam covered more ground than any other player, certainly in the first half anyway.
And people tweeted back and said that's no surprise because he's got a bigger shadow than any player, so he would cover more ground.
Right.
Yeah. He ran something like 6 kilometres compared to everybody else who'd run about 5.5.
How far did Andy Carroll run?
I don't know. I mean, whatever direction he was running in was probably the wrong direction.
You weren't impressed with him?
No, I mean, I've seen him have worse games
as well. Actually,
against Everton this season, he was much worse. He really does struggle to to link up with Suarez, and he seems a yard slower than everybody else, even like in his head, like thinking about what he's going to do next with the ball. I just think there's going to be a time when Liverpool are going to have to decide what they're going to have to do with Andy Carroll. I mean, do they stick with him, or do they just play the team that's going to be best for getting the results they need?
On that subject, if you've got to decide what you do with Andy Carroll, Dalglish spent $35 million on him, and also spent a lot of money on a lot of other British players in the summer.
Yeah, he's got. I mean,
so at what point did
Liverpool decide what they're going to do with Dalglish?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you judge Dalglish at the end of the season. I think the problem that
they didn't judge Roy Hodgson at the end of the season.
No. But I mean, everybody's aware that there is a difference with Dalglish being at the club, because you know Dalglish cares about the club as much as the fans. It's not like another manager.
But you care about the club as well.
Yeah, no, so. I care about the club, but I don't think fans would think that Dalglish is deliberately. You know, he's not deliberately. He's putting his ego above.
Are you saying that is the honeymoon over though? Do you? There's a question here. Actually, Pipoff 66, do you still buy into the myth of King Kenny?
Oh, well, I think if there's I think a few more. Had Liverpool lost to Norwich, lost to Swans, you know, these games which have been draws at home, I think there might be more rumblings at Anfield about what he's doing. But they didn't. They drew these games, and they still had many more chances than the opposition. I mean, I think they had something like 15-3 shots. Against Swansea, I mean, against Norwich they should have won as well. And it's not, I mean, when Liverpool finished second a few seasons ago, they drew 7 games at home against teams who were expected to beat. I think that they might find a bit more pressure when Liverpool play Chelsea away, and they play Man City at home coming up very shortly. I mean, they need to get...
Are you saying Dalglish could be in real trouble after that?
I'm not saying he could be in real trouble, but I think there could be more questions being asked.
Incidentally, you, with your pantheon of top managerial bonds and stuff, and people who've built the club quite literally with their own bare hands, where does Dalglish fit into all that?
Well,
in your book, what do you say about him?
I don't really say anything about him.
Really?
The most interesting... Well...
Is there nothing in your book about Dalglish?
Not really, no.
Are you going to do another book called The Player Manager, and he's going to be so big in that
one?
Well,
I mention him as the most successful example of a player manager in his time. And also I thought what he did at Blackburn was very interesting, and that was as a kind of forerunner of the way football was heading.
Mm.
And he did handle that really well. But it was a slightly different game then. And I don't see that much progression from what he did at Blackburn to what he does at Liverpool now in terms of tactics and the kind of players.
Stuart Downing, his Jason Wilcox.
It's very, very similar, isn't it? I mean, it's a very British style.
This is the thing that's more surprising this season compared to last, is that Liverpool, they're going to be a versatile team last season in terms of formations to play, because it varied from game to game. Mm. And this season they've been a lot more rigid. And perhaps that is a lot to do with trying to accommodate Carroll when he's played. And if they suddenly decide to cut the losses, I think the people outside of the club will ask questions. But maybe, you know, if the results then improve, then those questions might cease.
Are you saying that Liverpool would be in a better position now if Roy Hodgson had stayed at the club?
No. Only Phil would say that.
All right, okay. Final thought for the Premier League for now. QPR Man City...
What a game it was.
Yes.
It was a very exciting game, you know, City coming back twice.
Yeah.
And after they hadn't had much of a rest, as David Platt pointed out.
Yes.
But it was one of those examples where they've just got so much talent and so much strength in depth. Although
the absence of company.
Yeah, centre-back. Yeah. But it's one of those situations, it's a problem with City. You think, they'll have to deal with that problem somehow. But I imagine they'll deal with that problem in January by spending about £30 million.
That's exactly what Michael Richards said. Incidentally, he's not in the England squad, is he?
Yeah, it's a bit of a shock, isn't it?
I mean, it is a bit of a shock.
Obviously, Capello has seen something in him he doesn't like.
Right.
But I talked to Lee Dixon the other day, who said he would have Richards in every time, and he knows a bit about defending.
Right. Perhaps Dixon's he feels nice he doesn't need Richards because he's got John Terry in England squad. Controversially.
Yeah, although John Terry's a centre.
Different position, I know.
Yeah.
I'm just linking on to the John Terry thing.
I just wondered what you were saying
there. Right. No, I wasn't saying anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. And I wasn't saying that I wasn't saying anything like that either. Right.
Yeah, John Terry's in the England squad, although people are saying he won't play in the first game.
Yes.
Which is probably, I don't know why that is, probably because it's a bit of a traumatic time, but it's probably good politically. I mean, I don't know if you remember the big fuss that the FA made about...
Aragonés.
Yeah, and also playing in Spain when Sean Wright Phillips and various other Ashley Cole were the subject of really horrible racist chants. And I know John Terry is totally innocent until it's been established he's guilty, but the fact is there is a police investigation going on. Mm. And if you're going to be so righteous and talk about disgust and the whole football world should stand up and look at this, to have John Terry shaking hands with the Spain team under a police investigation, it just sort of doesn't strike the right note for me somehow. Mm.
Producer Ben says, is it safe to have him in the stands where he can chant what he wants then? That naughty producer Ben, eh?
But that wouldn't happen because we don't know what happened and the investigation's still going on.
We certainly don't. Right, okay. Sid in Spain. Let's dial him up now and get his view on another extraordinary weekend in the Liga. Hello, Sid.
Hello, James.
All right, you're in a train station in Barcelona.
Yeah, I'm just going up the escalator now.
All right. I can picture the scene, Sid. Another crazy weekend in that Liga. What do you want to talk about first? How about that Real 7, Osasuna 1? Is that 15 games Osasuna now conceded between Barcelona and Real?
15 goals. Their coach, José Luis Mendilibar, is famous for always playing with a very, very high defensive line, which is on occasion suicidal. Now, obviously, if you get it right, it's very good. But if you don't get it right, you get absolutely destroyed, particularly against a team like Madrid, who are so quick and so aggressive in the way they play. Mendilibar was the Valladolid coach who came to the Bernabeu about, three, 4 years ago now, and got hammered 7-1 or 7-0. And so it certainly has happened before. Madrid were brilliant, though. They were very, very good indeed. And it's not really news now. And this is the striking thing about it, is that Madrid are playing consistently very well at the moment. Not always for 90 minutes, because they're tending to race into a lead and then be relatively happy with that. But they really do look like such a strong side at the moment.
Are you getting a bit bored of all these ridiculous scorelines, though?
Well, it would be a bit churlish to say I don't like watching good teams play really, really good football. But yes, of course, there's an element of that. And I must say, it doesn't particularly fulfil you, even when they play really, really well. It doesn't particularly fulfil you to go to a game and know after 20 minutes, you know, once the side's got the first goal, that this is pretty much over now. Mm. And yeah, I do think that's potentially a genuine problem for the league. I mean, we've talked about this a lot before, about the huge differences in resources and in talent between the big two and everybody else. And also in terms of media significance, which was again shown this weekend, because of the fact that Real Madrid played at midday, which was greeted in such an incredible way.
In what way, Sid?
Well, this weekend, Real Madrid kicked off at 12 o'clock. Now, the reason for that, of course, is to try and open up the Asian market, the Spanish League. They're very, very conscious of what they believe are the advantages of the Premier League over the Spanish League in terms of international audience. And they believe that one of the keys to that is the fact that Premier League plays earlier and therefore is at a much better time to watch the game than La Liga, which traditionally kicks off anywhere between 5 o'clock in the afternoon and 10 o'clock at night. Now, this weekend, Madrid played at midday, and you'd think they'd landed on the moon, the way everyone was talking about it. Isn't it amazing? Oh, my God, they might eat rice and pasta for breakfast, and, oh, they'll have to go to bed early, and so much so that there were even pictures of Real Madrid players showing that they were going to bed early the night before a game. Now, of course, it wouldn't be the first time there have been embarrassing pictures from a player's hotel that appear on the internet, but this time it was deliberate, and they made a really, really big thing about it. Now, of course, completely forgetting the fact, or not so much forgetting the fact, as entirely and deliberately overlooking the fact that 10 or 12 teams have played on a Sunday at midday already this season. Every other side will at some stage go through this. But, of course, it doesn't really happen until it happens for Madrid or Barcelona. This weekend it did. And as an experiment, it worked brilliantly. The stadium was full, so that fear that, well, Spanish football fans won't want to do it wasn't there. It had good TV ratings in Spain from what we've seen so far. And from what we've seen, it had amazing TV ratings in China, although I get the feeling, James, that they're just plucking the figures out of the air, because we were told by AS this morning, one of the Madrid newspapers, that 60 million people watched it in Peking alone. Well, I checked it out, there's 19 million population, so they must have invited a hell of a lot of friends over.
Yeah, could well have happened. Sid, that's nice then, anyway, that they enjoyed the game over there in China. You must have been
enjoyed it, we just know they watched it, or at least we believe we know they watched it, because they've told us that. But as I say, I think they're trying to sell this. What a great idea, look, it works.
Right.
I think it's going to be a question of time as to whether it really does work or not.
Right, back to my link anyway. You must have been rather more fulfilled by the Athletic Bilbao Barcelona match, eh? What a stormer that was.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Really, really good fun. And it was good fun because it was two teams really going for each other. It became a less good game in terms of the talent and the way that the two teams were playing in the second half, because the rain just kept on coming and the pitch eventually got quite difficult to play on. But although it became less good, it was still just as fun because players were sliding. It was one of those games where a player would go into a slide tackle in his own half and end up going out for a corner at the other end of the pitch. And it was very, very fast, very intense. Some really silly mistakes and a couple of really lovely goals and just really good fun, and the kind of game that in a way sort of sums up Athletic Bilbao and games at San Mamés anyway, but I think in particular sums it up under Bielsa. And that's one of the things that's so striking about this, is that it was Bielsa against Guardiola, and Bielsa bit by bit is I think getting it right. Athletic 10 games unbeaten now for him.
Well, 2-2 draw here. Jacob, you enjoyed this as well, didn't you?
Yeah, it was really good. Sid, I was just during the commentary on Sky, the guy said that David Villa and Lionel Messi, there was a suggestion that they weren't on speaking terms anymore, and that Villa was on the bench and there was a slight problem there. Was there anything in that at all?
Well, what happened was the story was run by one of the Valencia-based sports newspapers saying that Messi and Villa didn't get on and that the relationship was broken. I think that's probably a slight kind of over-dramatisation of it. Now, it's interesting that it should come from one of the Valencia newspapers, because, of course, that's where Villa was before. I think his relationship with some journalists in Valencia remains quite good. So that implies that there could be something in it. It's been denied, as you would imagine, in Barcelona, and Pep Guardiola came out the day before the game and said, well, it's ridiculous to say that Messi and Villa have fallen out, and Villa's too much of a nice guy for anyone to ever fall out with him. Now, what I personally believe is true is that Barcelona do have a situation in which Messi has to be the focal point, and that there will be times when, of course, that I think naturally will irritate Villa because everything is funneled towards Messi. Also, I think Villa this season hasn't played that well. He doesn't look quite as fit. He doesn't look quite as fast as he has in the past. And also, he's been carrying a very small injury for the last two or three weeks, and I suspect that played a part in it. But I wouldn't go so far as to say they're not talking, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's a small degree of tension, yeah.
All right. Final thing then, Sid. The point yesterday sees Real Madrid, what, 3 points clear of Barcelona now at the top of the Liga? Given how few points, etc., the two big teams tend to drop in the course of the season, could that already be a decisive advantage?
Not decisive, because I think there's still too much to come, but I think it's very, very significant. A lot of Barcelona saying, yeah, but the start of the season has been relatively easy for Real Madrid. That's true in terms of, if you look at the fixture list, Madrid haven't played Athletic, they haven't played Sevilla, they haven't played Valencia, although they will do immediately after the international break. They haven't played Atletico Madrid, although let's face it, that's never a hard game for Real Madrid. And so in that sense, yeah, they've had it relatively easy, so you could see maybe a swing back. But there's a couple of reasons to think that's not going to be the case. Madrid over the last couple of years have actually dropped points against supposedly poor teams rather than against the good ones. They tend to smack the good ones into the following week. They scored 6 against Valencia at the back end of last year, 6 against Sevilla at the back end of last year as well. So I don't think that argument necessarily stands up. The other thing is that this year, the chance to close that gap for Barcelona obviously is offered with the first Clásico, but this year, for the first time I think in 2 or 3 years, the first Clásico will be in Madrid, not in Barcelona. The pressure will be on Barcelona to win it. Madrid could come out of it with a draw and, of course, maintain that 3-point lead at the top of the table. I also think 3 points, as you say, is a lot, because they simply won't drop many points over the course of the season anyway. And there's another way of looking at this. For those who think this isn't significant, it most certainly is. Since Pep Guardiola has been manager of Barcelona, his team have never been as many as 3 points behind Real Madrid.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Well, actually not, in Catalonia, actually, to be, well, you know, be a bit more delicate. Anyway, still to come in this exciting pod, there's a bit of talk about the Championship, bit of talk about Italy, bit of talk about posts, and bit of talk about where England should stay in Poland, I think, Barney Roney.
Well, they're staying in Krakow, in what, according to...
sub-editors behave, eh?
Indeed. According to what some people on TripAdvisor have described as the 33rd best hotel in Krakow.
Oh, really?
I think the point is, what they've done is they've massively reacted to the ludicrous gilded isolation of South Africa by going the other way and staying in a kind of city centre hotel.
Spartan, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this moment, hotel, there are still two rooms that you can book in it for the whole of the duration and
really?
Stay in this. Yeah, I mean,
we should get in there.
Get on there, yeah. And, yeah. And I'm sure the.
Because we haven't decided where our pod experience is going to be, Greg. You're, you know, now half Polish, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've heard there's like a Polish equivalent, a Travel Lodge, which
right.
is quite nice. I
mean, okay.
Yeah, we could get, you know, kind of cold meat. And
right. As long as they've got big plates at the salad buffet, that's all I care about. Barney, you're writing a piece on this, which is going to appear in tomorrow's Guardian, is that right?
Yeah.
Hey! Barney Roney on England's hotel at Euro 2012.
Are there any nightclubs nearby the hotel?
Oh, Jacob, you've got some Krakow. Oh, dear, this is going to come out wrong, but experience of Krakow. Yeah.
Spent 3 days there in 2007.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Good. At the same hotel or not?
No, very good hostel.
All right.
Yeah.
Good. Nice place?
Really good place. Krakow?
Yep.
Yeah, great.
Krakow's lovely. It's like the only really sort of, I mean, you can see why
you're going to say it's the only nice place in Poland?
No.
It's better than Warsaw.
It's the one which has got the nice shopping district, and it's probably the fanciest place that England could find to stay.
All right.
It's nowhere near where they're going to be playing. There's not a ground around there, but they're staying in the nice bit.
Are there no games in Krakow?
No.
But there is a very nice shopping district, which the hotel is right next to. But it's going to, they've gone to the other extreme, and it will end up, you know, there's so many temptations, you know, the wags will be out in force, and
right.
it could turn into a circus, that's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, there you go. Now, the championship. Woof, quite literally, Jacob Stamberg. I don't know if you found time to watch any of this. Your lot, West Ham, now in second place.
Well, still in second place.
Still in second place, yeah.
Yeah.
Southampton looking good, though. Big whip from them away in Coventry.
Yeah, then they did well because they were 2-0 up at half time, and then they threw it away nearly and went back to 2 with about 20 minutes to go, and then they immediately hit back and scored twice more. So they're 5 points clear at the moment of West Ham. It kind of looks like those two are, although West Ham are only a point ahead of Middlesbrough, who are third, it kind of looks like those two are going to be the top two for a while, because it's been like that for a few weeks. And they had that big game a couple of weeks ago where Southampton beat West Ham 1-0, but it was a very, very tight game. Unless they start to fall away, because I think they've only used something like 14 or 15 players. They haven't really had an injury crisis yet. They've got a small squad, whereas West Ham have a very big squad. They've got about 6 players out at the moment, and they've only lost 1 in 6,
right.
which was against Southampton.
Well, you've got a big manager as well, haven't they?
Yep, with his big head. Yeah.
All right. Anyway,
it's a good story, Southampton, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, the former physio turned coach,
yep.
very energetic, very friendly, and you know, they have a great youth system. I mean, you know, they've got players who have come up the divisions with them,
and they've got mysterious European owners as well who have funds that nobody's quite clear about.
Well, they might be able to strengthen in January.
Well, they might do.
Yeah.
That's true. Meanwhile, that's the top two, but down at the other end, Coventry are now in penultimate place. Below them, Doncaster. Who had a big win at the weekend away at Ipswich?
Yeah, and El Hadji Tief scored twice.
Yeah,
first goals for the club.
All right.
Yeah,
Billy Sharp also scoring and being
got
applauded.
Standing ovation from the Ipswich fans.
That was nice, wasn't it?
Very nice.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's strange at Doncaster what's going on there, but
is it?
You know,
can we talk about it?
I don't know if we can. Well, I suppose we can.
I think we talked about it a little bit last week. Give us your take on it. It is an unusual situation. What's happening at Donny?
Yeah, just with all these players coming in for 2 months. So John Ashdown was at the game he was doing it for the Observer and just said, yeah, Diouf will be really good for 2 months and then he's off. And
right.
they'll have to find someone else.
They basically handed over the transfer reins to Willie Mackay.
Willie Mackay, yeah.
Good.
Who else is there for 2 months? Chimbonda.
Chimbonda and Ilunga. And there's a suggestion that Diarra from Madrid
might be coming. It's like a holding station, isn't it?
Yeah,
like a holding station for players who want to go elsewhere.
All right. Yeah. Well, it could work out for both sides. For both sides.
Yeah.
John said that Ipswich were absolutely terrible as well.
All right.
Surprising, because they're the best team I've seen at Upton Park this year. So he said that, it was quite a nice line. He said that someone said to me in the press room that in the Championship, everyone sort of does musical chairs throughout the season, and then you kind of just end up where you are when it finishes in May, and that's where you just finish, and then you go up or stay down.
That's the Championship. Crazy. Dramatic weekend, meanwhile, in Italy, where two big games were called off. One was Genoa-Inter, which I don't know if you saw any of the footage from Genoa. Unbelievable. I mean, 6 people died. There was, these rivers broke their banks and were sweeping cars, people away. Terrible scenes. Anyway, naturally, the Genoa-Inter game was called off. Napoli, there's a lot of rain down there. The stadium was fine, apparently, but they decided to call the game off as well. That was Napoli-Juve, which all means that Udinese and Lazio have gone top of the table because Juve haven't. Played. Di Natale scoring an Udinese's win. He is top scorer again at the moment. He's been top scorer for the last 2 years. Cassano's out. Rossi's out of the Italy picture. Did Di Natale get a call up? No. No, he didn't.
You've only scored 13 goals.
Sorry?
They've scored 13 goals.
Who? Udinese?
Yeah. In 10 games. Right. They're top of Serie A.
Yeah, they're quite parsimonious. That's one of the interesting things about Udinese. They've got a very good defence. Is it the best defence in... Can you look that up?
They've conceded four goals all season.
There you go.
It's extraordinary.
Well, this is quite a departure for Udinese from their usual free-flowing, Friulian style.
But Napoli have scored 13
You can
as well.
Say that.
Right.
And Napoli have scored 13 as well, and they've got all these great strikers.
Well, Cavani's not having the best of times, is he, this year? Lavezzi only scored his first goal at home in about a year the other day. So there you go. Interesting. Shame about Di Natale. Prandelli says he doesn't need to give him a tryout. I would suggest he absolutely does, because his previous experiences in the national team haven't been the best. So he needs to work out how he can use him, because Rossi's going to be just back before the European Championships, and Cassano might not be. So, you know, Balotelli's in there, of course, and that's great. But anyway. In other Serie A news, where Milan are a point behind the two leaders after winning their fifth straight game. They've scored 18 goals in those five games. They're really, really looking very fancy going forward. Ibrahimovic and Rubinho looking brilliant. It was one of those annoying games when Ibrahimovic is actually really good yesterday, which confounds all your, you know, your carefully prepared opinions on him. Pippo Inzaghi, 38-year-old Pippo Inzaghi, Super Pippo, who today launches his book, Super Pippo, King of Goals. All proceeds are going to charity, before anyone gets snide about it. Anyway, he had his first game in ages. I'm not sure if it was a year. He certainly did his knee in about a year ago. And he missed... Well, it was a good save to stop him scoring.
How many times was he offside?
I don't know.
It's interesting, if you read his book, interesting a bit about growing up in offside after he was...
after he was born there. dear. And, less happily, it looks like Sinisa Mihajlovic will be getting... the envelope containing his P45 today from Fiorentina. He's won as many games as he's lost this season, but he's only won one of the last seven, and apparently the folk at Fiorentina have had enough. They had a defeat at Chievo this weekend, so that looks like that for Sinisa Mihajlovic. Milan's win, I should mention, came against the team that has been storming Serie A of late, Catania, the giant killing specialists out of Sicily. Yeah. Barney, you have a question.
I was just wanting to ask about Atalanta. I noticed that they've been docked 6 points.
Correct. They are appealing.
Right.
Yeah.
They've been convicted of match fixing.
By the sporting courts, yes. Right. And their captain, Cristiano Doni, was banned from football for 3.5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And they just lost 6 points for that.
That's right, yeah.
And how many people went to prison?
None. Right. None people. Right. Is this a cricket question, Barney?
No, I'm just wondering how they do things over there. Right.
I should mention on the subject of people going to prison that many years after the event, Luciano Moggi's criminal trial is due for completion. It might actually be this week. I mean, the date tends to move, but I think it was 2 weeks ago that they said that the verdict would be in 2 weeks, and that might well see a custodial sentence, or at least there is the potential for that, perhaps given his advancing age. That won't be the case. But anyway, yeah, so you might see some jail time there.
And that was for actually fixing a match?
Well, no, that wasn't actually fixing matches, but it was for doing things like buying shadowy SIM cards for referees so that he could contact them whenever he wanted and tell them what to do.
Right.
Yeah, and give them kind of coded instructions. Anyway, speaking of coded instructions, I'm getting winks and nods from Ben, the producer, telling me to wrap it up. Because that's all the Football Weekly goodness we've got for today. There will be another dose of said stuff on Thursday in Football Weekly Extra with Jonathan Wilson, another of the pod's team of respected authors. And I'm not sure who else will be in. But anyway, lots of exciting bleeping, flashing synapse fun there on Thursday. Do join us for that. Meantime, many thanks for being with us today. Thanks to producer Ben, and welcome back. Thank you, Barney Rone.
Thanks, James.
Greg Ruffley.
See you, James.
And Jacob Steinberg.
Thanks, James.
We'll speak to you on Thursday. Have a terrific week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.